May 1967, the wail of the Banshee. After what seemed like a lifetime in the industrial school, the day came when Father Breheny, backed by Sister Philomena, informed us we could stay no longer. A group of us had reached the age of 18, and that included Desi, Flynn, McCormick, and myself. Since we had made it to that age alive, our days ahead would be spent outside the concrete walls, rather than in a grave by an apple tree. Goodbye to cold beds. Goodbye to mad nuns. Goodbye to getting clattered with clods of turf on the head. McCormick said he swore he heard a banshee, the fairy messenger of death, crying outside the school the night before. The only death the wail signified, he said, was the death of this hellhole. A new life beckoned outside its doors.
"You're on your own now," said Father Breheny. "My only regret is that you lot ever darkened these doors in the first place. It certainly hasn't done mine or the good sister's health any good. Look at my grey hair, the bishing that I have left. Does anyone want to guess where that came from?"
He looked at Dixie Flynn and clenched his fist by nature. He then looked at me. No one dared say a word lest it set him off again.
"Go and good riddance to the lot of you dirty scuts," added Sister Philomena. "We don't expect to get any thanks for the education and hospitality we provided for the last 10 years. There's little thanks these days for doing God's work. There's damn little thanks at all."
She turned her bitter scowl towards me, and an expression of absolute disgust overcame her face.
"They don't want you to find them. They are far better off without the likes of you for a brother. They've nice homes now, and they've let God into their pitiful souls. Something you'll never know. God knows I've tried to beat him out, but Satan will forever lurk inside the black soul of a filthy swine like you."
She still terrified me, and I was too weak to defend myself. But the Tom McCormick now clenched his fist, and for a moment, I thought he'd clock her. But Breheny, always one step ahead, grabbed both McCormick and myself by the scruffs of the neck and tossed us out.
"Get out! Get out and don't let me ever see you lot again!"
He turned to grab the other two, but Dixie Flynn had suffered enough beatings at his hands and had no great desire to take one more for the road. He quickly slipped out the door. Breheny drew a ferocious kick, but only struck fresh air. Dixie missed a boot up the arse by the nose of an impoverished cat.
"God almighty! God almighty," said Breheny. "You've driven me demented to the end."
With those words, he looked up to the heavens and scratched the remainder of his tuft of grey hair while we all walked sheepishly towards the great big door, carrying the few belongings we owned. Though we'd always dreamed of this day, truth be told, we were all terrified. Slowly, the great big industrial school that loomed so large in our lives became tiny in the distance. And for some reason, there were tears in all our eyes, as if for some strange reason we were sad to leave. It had been the asylum of our being for so long, and all we had now was a big empty old world waiting for us. "To hell with all this, brothers," shouted Dixie Flynn. "What are we crying for? Listen here to me, lads, and listen to me good. Farewell to clods of turf on the head. Hello, the sod hoppers." The words were magic. They were the warmth of a well-lit turf fire. "We'll all get bits of jobs to pay our way. Looking after a farm, painting, scrubbing pots and pans,
Who gives a shite? There's lots of stuff we can do, and in the evenings we'll practice our songs. Brothers, we'll be playing our first gig in no time. We'll be bigger than the feckin' Beatles.
He then turned around and gave a two-fingered salute to the old school. We all did. And then we walked into the uncertain future, a little less fearful. That night I went back to our old house, the first time I'd seen it since the authorities dragged us all away. It was still there, forlorn and damp as ever. It was a sorrowful sight, if ever I'd seen one. But it wasn't like I'd been living in a palace for the last 10 years either. The tears came flooding back again, for all around were the voices of my sisters and my brother. Where were they now? I remember the words of Uncle Ned, the promise we made to him, to always stay together. A broken promise, but a broken promise not of our doing. But there was still time, plenty of time. Until I was dead and in my grave, I'd not give up searching for my brother and sisters again. I thought I was all alone, but something moved in the corner. Something dark and sinister, like a big black rat. Though used to rats, the heart jumped. And then I thought to myself, Tinker? But it couldn't be. When I was a young lad, I found a strange comb outside our house one day, and I was sad because I thought someone in our family was going to die. I thought it might even be our cat Tinker, because she was very sick at that time. I didn't want Tinker to die. Even though she scraped me a lot and would always jump up on the table and quickly raid my rashers and sausages when I was looking the other way. That, of course, was on a good day when you get rashers and sausages. My father would give out to me for being half asleep and sometimes throw a clout but never raise a hand against the cat. Despite all that, I didn't want her to die. I was worried in case she'd die because my grandmother had told me if you find a comb like that, it surely meant very bad luck, because the banshee, whose wail foretold the death of a family member, always carried a comb. It was her thing. If she wasn't wailing outside some poor soul's window, she was combing her long grey hair. Like many old women, my young mind surmised the banshee must be a bit scatterbrained, always misplacing their odds and ends, because the banshee was known to lose her comb every now and then. My grandmother warned me that if I ever came across the banshee's comb, to never touch it, because the comb to her was precious, and she'd go so far as to kill you just to get her prized possession back. My grandmother had heard of banshee many times, and had even on one occasion the misfortune of seeing her. She described her as a grey-haired old hag, though she also had the ability to transform herself into the most beautiful golden-haired woman on earth. In either guise, her wail foretold death, and within 3 days someone dear would have departed this world for the next. Because I didn't want Tinker to die, I took the comb, dug a hole and hid it in the garden. I was hoping the banshee would lose her power without her comb and not be able to take Tinker away from us. After hiding the comb, Tinker wasn't long getting better and I was happy again, even if she was a contrary cat and still gave me some sore scratches with her paws. As time went on, I forgot about hiding the comb until my father got a notion to sow some spuds one fine day. While digging the garden, he found the comb, and when my sister Fionnuala saw it, immediately identified it as her doll's comb that went missing a few years earlier. My father got fierce angry, shouting, "What kind of little blackguard hides little girls' combs?" He grabbed me and gave me an awful hiding. Afterwards, I went into the woods to have a good cry. When I was sitting there all alone, I heard something up in the tree. I looked up, and it was Tinker, trying to catch a few birds. She came down and jumped on my lap. This time she didn't scrape me. She was a cool cat. And now all these years later, I ran after the black shape calling, "Tinker! Tinker!" But there was nothing there. I couldn't sleep that night, tossing and turning on the surviving frame of a bed. When I did close my eyes, my head was filled with terrible nightmares. Then a piercing scream that was begot in some hellish place woke not only me, but surely the dead too. It was a wailing cry, one that could only come from the fairy messenger of death. I jumped out of the bed, its rusty springs making an equally unmerciful screech, and looked out through the broken window in my room. It looked like an old tree at first, but as it moved back into the bushes, I realized it was a grey-haired old woman standing there, looking at our house. I grabbed an old iron poker and ran outside. "What do you want?" I shouted. There was no answer, and truth be told, I did not want to know her answer, for her cry alone portended the death of a family member. "Keep away from my house," I shouted again. Then there followed a feeble cry, and something moved through the long grass. And then she gave her familiar meow. And under the shadow of our dark old house, I recognized her green eyes. She started to purr and slowly approached me. She was thin and old, but she'd waited all these years for one of the family to come back. I rubbed her on the head to make sure she was real. She was real sure enough, and she hadn't forgotten who I was. I lifted her up and carried her inside. From my bag, I pulled out a bottle of milk that I'd nicked from the nuns, from the cow I'd milked the day before. I went to the cupboard and found an old saucer and cup, and Tinker and I both had a sup of milk for old time's sake. Not long after taking that comb, my sister gave it back again once she realized it was not her doll's comb after all. "I knew," I cried. I quickly grabbed it, ran outside and flung it into the farthest corner of the woods. I'm not sure if the banshee ever found her comb, and perhaps that's why she stood outside our house once again tonight, still wailing after all these years.